Imagine for a second that you are walking past an open utility closet in a massive commercial building.
Or maybe you're looking behind the scenes of a heavy industrial factory.
Right, exactly. And you hear that low, constant hum of power.
Oh yeah, that unmistakable sound.
Yeah. And if you look closely at the open electrical panels, you know, you won't just see tangles of normal wire. You're going to see these incredibly heavy, solid metal veins routing massive amounts of electricity.
We're talking about solid copper bars, sometimes an inch thick and several inches wide.
Yes, exactly. Solid copper. And here's the thing that really caught my eye recently. They aren't just straight lines.
Right, they really are.
They snake, they fold, they weave around impossibly tight corners to connect all the breakers and, you know, transformers together.
It's basically industrial origami.
It really is. I caught myself just staring at one of these intricate setups, thinking, like, how on earth are human beings taking massive, stubborn slabs of solid metal and bending them into perfect geometric shapes?
Without just snapping them in half.
Exactly, or completely ruining them. Well, welcome to today's deep dive.
We have a really fascinating topic today.
We do. We are taking a massive stack of engineering data, metallurgical research, and fabrication guidelines, and we are going to decode the hidden physics, the geometry, and the material science required to bend solid copper perfectly.
And, you know, it really is a fascinating mechanical puzzle. Plus, the stakes for getting it right are incredibly high.
How so? Like, what happens if it's not perfect?
Well, because when you or I look at a bent piece of copper in one of those panels, we just see a shape, right? A clean, shiny right angle.
Sure, just a piece of metal doing its job.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But what we don't see is the invisible war going on inside that metal. The bend zone, that specific corner where the metal was forced to change direction, it carries the highest local strain in that entire electrical system.
Oh, wow. So it's basically the weakest link.
Precisely. Bending these bus bars isn't just a matter of making the metal fit into a cramped gray box. If the fabrication technique is off by even a tiny margin, it introduces microscopic defects into the copper's structure.
Wait, microscopic defects? Like tiny cracks?
Tiny cracks, yes. Or it can create hidden physical twists or lock in massive amounts of invisible tension.
That sounds dangerous.
It is, because when that bus bar goes live, it's subjected to wild temperature swings, thermal expansion, fault forces, and the constant heavy vibration of an active grid.
Right. It's just getting battered by physical and electrical stress.
Exactly. So a bad bend is essentially a ticking time bomb. It can lead to a completely catastrophic electrical failure.
Okay, let's unpack this from the very beginning, because before we can even talk about the heavy machinery doing the bending, I want to understand what is physically happening inside that solid bar when it's forced to turn a corner.
Sure. It helps to have a visual.
Yeah, so think of holding a really thick, chunky rubber erasure in your hands.
Oh, that's a great analogy.
Right. If you grab both ends and fold that erasure in half, you can literally see the physics happening. The top part of the eraser, like the outside of the curve, it stretches out and gets incredibly tight.
It does.
Meanwhile, the bottom part of the eraser, the inside of the fold, it bunches up and wrinkles.
Yeah, the exact same physical reality applies to solid copper.
So if the inside curve of your bend is too tight, the outer fibers of the copper are being stretched beyond their physical limit.
And they will literally tear open.
Exactly. Which is wild. At the exact same time, the inner face of the bend is being crushed together.
Right. In a process engineers actually call compressive instability.
Compressive instability. Okay. So how do fabricators stop that from happening?
Well, understanding the specific material temperament of the copper is basically step one for any fabricator. We're usually talking about electrical grade bus bar here.
Okay.
Specifically a type known as ETP copper. That stands for electrical grade tough pitch.
Electrical grade tough pitch.
Yeah.
Got it.
Now, if you walk into a fabrication shop and look at a pallet of this copper, it all looks identical. It has that classic, beautiful reddish gold sheen.
Sure, it just looks like copper.
But its internal structure can be vastly different depending on its temper.
Temper? Like how angry it is?
Well, sort of. Temper is essentially the condition of the metal. How stiff or forgiving it is before you even lay a finger on it. The engineering guidelines usually categorize this into soft, half-hard, and hard tempers.
I'm assuming soft temper is the easiest to work with, right? Like, if you are going to fold a piece of thick metal, you want it to be as forgiving as possible.
Absolutely. Soft or annealed copper is incredibly forgiving. It's highly ductile.
Ductile meaning stretchy.
Yeah, basically. To avoid getting bogged down in the raw data, just think of it this way. Soft copper has a very high elongation rate. you can stretch it and pull it significantly before it decides to tear.
Okay, that makes total sense.
It also has a relatively low tensile strength and lower hardness compared to the other tempers. That makes it absolutely ideal if you need to make a very tight, aggressive bend while the metal is cold.
But what if they have to use half-hard or hard copper?
Then that elongation capacity plummets and the stiffness shoots up. The metal becomes extremely stubborn.
So you can't bend it the same way?
No, not at all.
Yeah.
If you try to force a hard temper copper into that same tight corner, it will crack open almost immediately because the ductility just isn't there. It can't handle the stretching on the outer edge.
So if you're a fabricator, you want to use soft copper, you calculate your bend, and you're good to go. The metal stays soft and everything works out perfectly, right?
Well, here is where the physics of metal throws a massive curveball.
Uh-oh.
The metal does not stay soft. The very act of bending the copper actually changes its physical properties in real time.
Wait, really? It changes while you're working on it?
Yes. It is a phenomenon called work hardening.
Work hardening, okay.
As you force that soft ductile copper to bend, the crystalline structure inside the metal starts to deform and lock up.
Like it's getting tangled inside.
Exactly. The friction and movement of those internal structures actually strengthen the material. So as you are pushing the metal through the bend, its yield strength is rising.
Oh, wow.
Its hardness is shooting up and its ductility is dropping.
Yeah.
By the time you finish the bend, the corner of that copper bar is literally not the same material it was when you started.
That is wild.
It has hardened itself against the stress you applied.
So the copper is actively fighting back and changing its identity just because you folded it.
Exactly. It's a dynamic process.
So because the physical properties of the metal are morphing under stress, how you choose to apply that stress must be super crucial.
That was everything.
And that brings us to the geometry of the bend itself, the orientation.
Yes. The geometry of the bend is perhaps the most fundamental decision a fabricator makes. The engineering data separates us into two distinct categories, flatwise bending and edgewise bending.
Okay, let me try to visualize this for everyone. Grab a standard foot-long plastic school ruler.
Perfect visual.
Right. So if you hold it at both ends and bend it flatwise, meaning you are folding it across its thinnest dimension, bringing the flat faces together, it's effortless.
Right. It easily bends.
The ruler just loops into a U-shape. But try to take that exact same ruler and bend it edgewise, meaning you try to fold it across its wide, flat edge.
Oh, you can't.
No, it's virtually impossible. The plastic wants to aggressively twist out of your hands, or it wants to buckle or snap entirely.
And that analogy translates perfectly to heavy industrial copper.
I figured it might.
Flatwise bending folds the bar across its narrowest thickness. Because the dimension you are stretching and compressing is relatively thin, the overall strain on the metal is lower.
Which allows for much tighter bend radii.
Exactly. Edgewise bending, which the fabrication industry very appropriately calls the hard way bend.
The hard way bend. I like that.
It is an entirely different beast. You are asking the metal to stretch and compress across a massive, wide, unsupported section.
So it's just begging to break.
The chances of the outer surface cracking or the interface buckling and wrinkling go through the roof.
Let's put some scale to this. If I'm designing an electrical panel, how do I know what radius to use for these bends so I don't, you know, destroy the metal?
Well, for flatwise bending of that soft, forgiving ETP copper, the golden rule of thumb is quite simple. It's known as the 1X rule.
The 1X rule, okay.
Your minimum inside radius should simply equal the thickness of the bar.
Oh, that's easy. So if your copper bar is 5 millimeters thick, the tightest inside curve you can safely make is a 5 millimeter radius.
Straightforward, right?
Yeah, super straightforward.
But when you move to edgewise bending, the engineering guidance becomes incredibly conservative.
How conservative?
The rule for an edgewise bend requires an inside radius of 1.5 to 2 times the bar's width.
Wait, I need to do the math on that because that sounds massive.
It is massive.
Let's say we have a copper bus bar that is 20 millimeters wide. If we bend it flatwise, we might only need a tiny little curve depending on its thickness.
Right.
But if we bend that same bar edgewise across that 20 millimeter width, we need an inside curve radius of 30 to 40 millimeters.
Exactly.
And if we have a massive bar that is 100 millimeters wide, so about 4 inches, the edgewise radius needs to be 150 to 200 millimeters.
Yeah.
That is a huge sweeping curve.
It is a massive sweep. And keep in mind, that is only for the softest, most forgiving copper.
Oh, right. What if it's hard temper?
If you were dealing with half hard or hard copper, The guidance dictates even wider, more conservative sweeping curves.
Yeah.
The metal simply cannot handle the strain of a tight hardway bend.
Okay, I have to ask the obvious question here.
Go for it.
If edgewise bending is universally known as the hard way, if it concentrates insane amounts of strain across the metal, if it requires massive sweeping curves, and it dramatically increases the likelihood of cracking, why on earth would anyone ever choose to do it?
That's a very fair question.
Like, why wouldn't an engineer just design every single connection in a panel to be flatwise?
Well, you're touching on the main problem engineers face every day. The physical reality of the space they're working in.
Ah, spatial constraints.
Right. Picture the inside of a tightly constrained, highly complex electrical substation. You have breakers, transformers, cooling systems, and massive bundles of existing wire.
It's packed.
It's totally packed. The path that the electrical current needs to take might dictate that the solid copper bar has to turn a corner on its edge just to dodge a component and meet the connection point perfectly.
So they literally don't have a choice.
Exactly. You cannot always change the architecture of a multi-million dollar electrical grid just to make a fabricator's day slightly easier. The copper has to go where the copper has to go.
Wow. But if standard presses and bending machines just leave that wide edge unsupported, wouldn't the copper just warp? Like, instead of staying a nice square rectangle, wouldn't the cross section just bulge out and turn into an oval?
It absolutely would ovalize. Or you would buckle into ways on the inside curve.
Right, the eraser wrinkling.
Exactly. So to prevent that, fabricators cannot use standard tools. They have to rely on highly specialized purpose-built machinery.
Like what?
They use guided edge-bending dies, heavy rotary attachments, and incredibly complex clamping fixtures.
That sounds intense.
The entire purpose of this heavy tooling is to act like a straitjacket for the metal. It physically clamps down on all four sides of the cross-section throughout the entire bending motion.
Oh, I see.
You are essentially giving the metal nowhere to buckle, nowhere to bulge, and nowhere to ovalize, forcing it to maintain its perfect rectangular integrity while it undergoes massive structural strain.
That is incredible. Okay, so let's say a fabricator has picked their orientation. They have their straitjacket tooling clamped down. And they calculate the radius perfectly and pull the lever to bend the copper to exactly 90 degrees.
Okay.
You'd think the job is done, but metal has one more deeply frustrating trick up its sleeve, doesn't it?
It sure does.
It wants to bounce back.
Right. This brings us to a phenomenon known as spring back, which is the elastic recovery of the material after the forming pressure is taken away.
Spring back.
Remember earlier when we talked about work hardening?
Right. The act of bending the copper makes it harder and stiffer.
Exactly. Because the copper is strengthening and stiffening as it deforms, the corner of that bar begins to act less like putty and more like a tightly wound automotive spring.
Oh, geez.
When the massive hydraulic pressure of the bending machine is finally released, the copper relaxes and it elastically recovers a portion of that bend angle.
It literally unbends itself slightly.
It unbends itself.
So if you need a perfect 90-degree angle to connect to electrical components, you can't just tell the machine to bend it to 90 degrees.
No, we can.
You'd end up with like 87 degrees and nothing would fit.
Right.
You actually have to overbend the metal intentionally.
You have to push it past your target and trust that it will relax back into the perfect position.
That sounds so risky.
Well, for a simple flatwise bend on soft copper, a fabricator might just intuitively overbend it a tiny fraction. But for an edgewise bend, or if they're using hard temper copper, the spring back is violent and significant.
So they can't just guess.
Not at all. In modern high-tech panel shops, they don't guess. They use advanced CNC bending systems that constantly measure the resistance of the metal as it bends.
Wow. Real-time feedback.
Exactly. They calculate the exact amount of work hardening happening in real time and automatically execute the precise amount of spring back compensation.
That is amazing.
Because in rigid electrical assemblies, if you miss your angle by even a degree, the thick metal bolt holes on the components won't line up and the piece is totally useless.
Which perfectly sets up the craziest part of this entire process for me. The absolute mathematical precision required before anyone even makes the very first cut.
Oh, the math is intense.
Right, because as we established with the rubber eraser analogy, folding the metal changes its physical dimensions. The outside stretches and gets longer, the inside bunches up and gets shorter. So how does a fabricator looking at a long, straight stick of copper know exactly where to cut it so that after it stretches and compresses through multiple bends, it ends up being the exact right length to fit in the panel?
Well, they calculate something called the bend allowance,
bend allowance.
This gives them the precise developed length of the flat bar before any cutting happens. Now, calculating the bend allowance relies on understanding what happens deep inside the thickness of the metal. And the secret to the entire calculation is a variable known as the K factor.
Okay, I'm definitely going to need you to unpack the K factor for me. I saw all the incredibly complex algebra and formulas in the engineering guides, and it literally made my head spin. What is the K factor actually doing?
Let's step away from the math formulas and use a visual.
Please do.
Imagine a track and field stadium, specifically the curved part of the running track.
Okay, I'm picturing it.
You have a runner in the far outside lane and a runner in the tight inside lane. When they go around that curve, the outside runner has to cover a significantly longer distance, stretching their run. The inside runner is on a much tighter, shorter path.
Right, which is why they stagger the starting lines in a race.
Exactly. Now imagine a runner perfectly positioned in a lane somewhere near the middle of that track. The path they run is the exact average distance of the curve. They aren't stretching to the extreme outside, and they aren't compressed to the extreme inside.
Okay, I follow.
Inside a bending piece of copper, there is a microscopic invisible plane that acts just like that middle runner.
Oh, fascinating.
While the outer surface of the copper stretches and the inner surface compresses, this invisible middle layer does neither. It stays the exact same length before, during, and after the bend. Engineers call this the neutral axis.
The neutral axis, okay.
And the K factor is simply a numerical value that pinpoints exactly where that neutral axis is hiding inside the thickness of the bar.
Ugh, that makes complete sense. So the K factor is just locating that perfectly neutral middle runner, and once you know how long their path is, you know exactly how much metal is going to be consumed by making the corner.
That's it entirely. You nailed it.
Wow.
And to show you how precise this gets, let's look at a real-world scenario from the fabrication data.
Okay, lay it on me.
Imagine you need to make a 90-degree bend on a flat bar that is 50 millimeters wide and 5 millimeters thick.
Okay, 50 by 5.
And you are using a 5-millimeter inside curve radius. Based on the material, your K factor locates that neutral axis at exactly 0.33 through the thickness.
So about a third of the way through.
Right. When you calculate the path of that neutral axis, you find that the bend allowance, the exact amount of metal consumed by the curve, is 10.45 millimeters.
So you measure the two straight flat sections you need, you add exactly 10.45 millimeters for the corner, and you make your cut.
That's exactly how it works.
Yeah.
And if you guess, or if you use the wrong K factor for your specific temper of copper, your flat bar is cut too short or too long.
Because the middle runner was in a different lane.
Exactly.
Right.
When you bend it, your final piece won't reach its connection point. The industry refers to this as wrong developed length, and it is one of the most common yet entirely preventable sources of expensive scrap metal in fabrication shops. Precision on the front end eliminates waste on the back end.
Makes total sense. Now, up until now, everything we've talked about assumes you can just wrestle the copper into submission at room temperature, cold bending.
Right.
Our research notes that this is the absolute gold standard in fabrication because it's fast, it preserves the shiny finish of the copper, and it's totally predictable.
Mostly, yeah.
But what happens when the math completely fails you? What if the copper is too thick, the temper is too stubborn, or the engineer radius is so tight that a cold bend will literally snap the bar in half?
Well, when you hit the absolute physical limits of cold working, you have no choice but to bring the heat. You must anneal the copper bus bar before you even attempt to bend it.
Anneal it. Okay. How much heat are we talking about here? Just warming it up with a blowtorch?
Oh, no. Far beyond that. While metallurgical data lists annealing temperatures across a very broad range, in a practical day-to-day workshop environment, controlled heating in the 400 to 600 degrees Celsius range is standard.
600 degrees Celsius. That is incredibly hot.
It is. At this temperature, you are fundamentally restructuring the atomic lattice of the metal again. Heating it deeply softens the copper, drastically lowers its yield strength, and fully restores its ductility.
It becomes pliable again.
Yes, exactly.
This is the part that genuinely surprised me. You can blast a highly engineered piece of electrical infrastructure with 600 degrees of heat, completely soften it, and it doesn't ruin its ability to conduct electricity.
Surprising, isn't it? But as long as the heating process is strictly controlled, the electrical conductivity of ETP copper remains essentially unchanged.
Wow.
It retains its perfect baseline conductivity. However, introducing extreme heat into an electrical component does carry a massive critical danger, the formation of scale.
What is scale? Like a crust?
Essentially, yes. If you apply excessive uncontrolled heat or heat it unevenly, you rapidly promote oxidation on the surface of the copper. This creates a dark, scaly layer of oxidized metal.
Okay, that sounds bad.
The problem is that copper oxide is not a good conductor. It acts as a thermal and electrical insulator.
Which sounds like the exact opposite of what you want in an electrical panel.
It is disastrous for an electrical panel. Bus bars have to be bolted together at the ends to transfer power. Those joints require incredibly low electrical resistance.
Right, the power has to flow easily.
If you leave an invisible layer of heat scale on a contact surface, you introduce heavy resistance at that bolted joint. When massive amounts of electrical current try to push through that resistance, it creates heat.
Oh, I see where this is going.
Yeah. In a high-power industrial setup, that heat can quickly compound, melt surrounding components, and lead to the exact catastrophic electrical fires we discussed at the very start.
That is terrifying.
It's a huge risk.
So, given all the, you know, the risk of scale, the threat of work hardening, the K factors, the massive forces needed to stop edgewise bends from buckling, what kind of gear is actually doing the heavy lifting in these shops?
It's heavy-duty stuff.
I initially pictured someone clamping the copper in a vise and just leaning on it with a giant wrench, but clearly human muscle isn't handling this.
Well, human muscle can handle very thin, small-scale work using simple, manual hand-lever benders, but those are mostly reserved for quick on-site adjustments.
Just tiny tweaks.
Right. They lack the rigid radius control we've been talking about. For the daily grueling fabrication inside a commercial panel shop, you typically see hydraulic or electric combination machines.
Okay, the real workhorses.
These are the heavy workhorses. They can shear, punch holes, and effortlessly bend copper bars up to 120 or even 160 millimeters wide.
Oh, wow.
And 12 millimeters thick. They use massive hydraulic rams and interchangeable heavy steel dies to force the metal into shape.
And what about the shops that are churning out thousands of these complex multi-bend pieces?
They rely on the absolute top tier of machinery, CNC busbar benders.
Oh, right. You mentioned CNC earlier.
These are gleaming production-scale robotic systems. An operator inputs the angles and the dimensions, and the machine handles the rest.
That's incredible.
It automatically calculates the K factor, constantly measures the work hardening resistance, dynamically applies the exact spring back compensation, and can execute incredibly complex sequences like zigzag offsets and repetitive U-bends with near perfect tolerance, piece after piece.
It takes all the guesswork out.
Completely.
So bringing all this together, we've journeyed from the microscopic stretching of an outer metal fiber on a rubber erasure all the way to the programming of multi-million dollar robotic CNC machines. What is the ultimate takeaway here? Like, how do we synthesize all these rules?
The core philosophy of successful copper busbar bending is recognizing that you cannot isolate these variables. It is an entirely interconnected ecosystem.
Interconnected, yeah.
You cannot pick your bend radius without knowing your temper. You cannot choose your tooling without knowing your orientation. You cannot calculate your cut length without knowing your K factor.
It's all linked.
Exactly. If a fabricator guesses on just a single one of those data points, say they use a slightly undersized die on a hard-drawn piece of copper, or they ignore spring back, the result is either expensive scrap metal or, far worse, a compromised electrical conductor installed in a live building.
Which we know can cause a fire.
Right. When treated methodically, with absolute respect for the physical limits of the material, bending copper is a perfectly controlled, entirely predictable science.
And I think that interconnectedness is why this topic is so surprisingly fascinating, even if you, the listener, never personally lay hands on a piece of industrial copper in your entire life. This deep dive is really a masterclass in respecting the invisible infrastructure of the modern world.
It really is.
The precision required to keep our electrified lives running seamlessly is staggering. Every single time you walk into a massive building and flip a light switch, you are unknowingly relying on a fabricator who understood exactly how far they could push a solid piece of metal before it broke.
Let's take that appreciation just one step further and leave you with something to really mull over.
Okay.
Think back to the concept of residual stress we touched on at the very beginning. Remember that a heavily bent piece of metal might look utterly flawless and perfect to the naked eye.
Like a perfect 90-degree corner.
Exactly. But if the fabricator forced it just slightly past its natural limits, that shiny right angle could be harboring massive amounts of locked-in structural stress.
Just waiting.
Just waiting. Imagine that invisible coiled tension sitting silently inside an electrical grid for years or even decades, just waiting to be triggered by the sudden thermal shock of a power surge.
That is deeply unsettling.
It really makes you pause and wonder what other perfectly solid, flawless-looking structures in our everyday world are secretly hiding invisible, locked-in stress.